All right, down to the final four in the NFL. It comes your way on Sunday. Patrick Mahomes limited today, but he is back this time of the year. It's more mental reps than anything. As we welcome in to break down last weekend and what's ahead this weekend, Scott Shanley joins us. Scott, good Wednesday morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Hey, let's go back to the last game that was played in the Superdome. Tampa Bay beats New Orleans. We see the emotion on the field of Drew Brees, and then the moment captured afterwards between Tom Brady and Drew's family. Before I get your thoughts on your former teammate, where does New Orleans go now after this season and that loss on Sunday?
Well, it's going to be a rebuilding year. They had this 4-year window where they won, I believe, 49 games, and more games than any other team in the NFL, and weren't able to win a championship. And they rolled a lot of contracts down the road, kicked the can down the road, so to speak, to try to win a championship while Drew was still there. So they're way over the salary cap. Obviously, losing Drew and his big cap number will help a little bit. But they have some tough choices to make. There's going to be some players that are not going to be able to be brought back in free agency, really good caliber starting players. There's going to be maybe a surprise or two as far as really good Pro Bowl caliber players let go just to get back under the salary cap. And then the biggest question revolves around the quarterback position. Do you believe that you can get it done with Jameis Winston? And he's a free agent. You have to be able to re-sign him first and foremost. And if you can't, is Taysom Hill an every down guy, which, you know, Coach Payton has said he thinks he is. So, you know, they don't have the fortune of drafting high in the draft, so it's probably not going to be a rookie that they throw in their day one to be their franchise quarterback. So plenty of questions, and then you throw on top of all that, they've lost a lot of coaches in the past few days to other places and front office members. So there will be a lot of change next year. I still think they're a talented enough team and well-coached enough to compete and win games. Just I don't think you're going to see a 13-3 or 12-4 team like we've seen the past 4 years.
There's a lot of stuff in there about the Saints. A couple of quick ones. What is Detroit getting in Dan Campbell, a guy that you know a little bit?
Yeah, I played with Dan when he was with the Dallas Cowboys. He was a fierce blocking tight end, one of the toughest guys I've ever seen play the game, and he was a great leader for us. And, you know, he went on and he coached in Miami for a while, became the interim head coach there, and I think players will love Dan. Dan is very authentic. What you see is what you get. There's nothing fake about him. I think players will love playing for a guy like Dan Campbell. And I always just love to see former players climb that coaching ladder and get to those positions to coach guys. He's not really that far removed from the game, and I think guys will love playing for his type of style.
Hey, were you surprised, because I think maybe LSU fans were, that the defensive line coach, Ryan Nielsen, was slated to go to LSU, go up the road a bit and become a defensive coordinator, but he's, I guess, I don't know, retained or given a new role with the Saints. How do you think that all worked out?
Yeah, I know Ryan wanted to go to LSU, and obviously Coach Orgeron wanted him to go there to be a promotion for Ryan to become a defensive coordinator. But something with the language in the contract that the Saints think highly of Ryan, they really do. And I was kind of surprised they didn't let him go do that, because it would be a promotion and a chance for Ryan to go run a defense himself. But, you know, they signed him to a contract extension, gave him the assistant head coach title, which Dan Campbell just had, and he got a head coaching gig out of that title. So I think Ryan looked at it from that perspective that, hey, a guy just left here with an assistant head coaching title, became a head coach. So even though I don't get to go run a defense for LSU, maybe there's a chance I can continue to accelerate in the coaching profession.
Kind of everybody knew it was coming when the Saints were done, whether it be this past Sunday, the following week, or in Tampa in the Super Bowl. That was going to be it for Drew Brees. As somebody that, I mean, I know you hold him in high regard. You played with him. You know what he means to that organization and that city. What were some of your thoughts as that came to an end and you saw Drew's emotions as he played his final game?
Well, a lot of different emotions for me. You know, the past 4 years covering this team, I've been there, you know, after each one of these games and have seen him, have spoke to him. And, you know, I can remember being up in Minneapolis for the Minneapolis Miracle and seeing him walk out of that locker room and the dejection he had 4 years ago. And it just got worse every single year because he realized the window on his career was closing. But I think what's hard as a player when you're done, this is immediate. So this will stay with him for a year or two. But after a few years, he'll look back at his career as a whole and realize, you know, just how what an accomplishment it was, you know, as a whole, especially what he meant to a city and a region and a state is unlike many other players. So it was bigger than championships, and I think once he gets away from the game, he'll realize that. It was hard for me to watch that game because you could watch that game, and whether Drew was fighting through pain and injuries, or just Father Time decided to show up at the end of the season, he wasn't the same Drew Brees we've all seen. Turn the ball over something he didn't do really the past couple of years. He couldn't throw the ball 20 yards down the field, and you could just tell that he was trying to hang on. And nobody wants to see a great player like Drew just hang on for dear life. And, you know, it's probably time for him to go, but he had a great run.
When you kind of peel back the curtain with, you know, Drew Brees not being 100%, we hear about Michael Thomas, who, you know, he did not have the kind of year that he envisioned at all and got no touches on Sunday, but he just wasn't healthy at all. Is it almost kind of a little bit surprising that the Saints made it this far and had this much success in the regular season, considering the ins and outs of guys that were healthy and not healthy, and, you know, from week to week they didn't know who was going to play?
Yeah, no question. I think when you look at what this team was able to accomplish this year and win as many games as they did with different faces all year long. I mean, we were talking a week ago that this was going to be one of the first times they had all their skilled players playing, and this was a playoff game. So they were bitten by the injury bug big time this year, but to their credit, to the coaching staff's credit, every single time they stepped out on the field, they didn't use it as an excuse, and they certainly won't use it as an excuse in the playoffs. They were without Taysom Hill and Latavius Murray, and Drew was playing through injuries. So it's one of those things. No, at the end of the day, nobody cares. If you're out there, they expect you to perform. And unfortunately for this team, they just weren't healthy enough throughout the entire year, especially on the offensive side of the ball, to gain any traction. Losing Deontay Harris against Tampa Bay was a huge loss for that offense in terms of just explosive playmakers. But that's what happens. I mean, every team could go back over the past 20 years of the NFL and say, if we would have just had this guy healthy, our season would have been different. That's just the name of the game.
Is that Tampa Bay defense good enough to win at Lambeau?
I think that Tampa Bay defense is good enough to win at Lambeau. My only concern is Tom Brady and his age. And anybody who's played, I know I'm saying that just after he beat the Saints, and he still looks like he's playing like he's 30 years old, but anybody that can tell you, the longer you play football, the harder it is to play in cold weather. The body does not move the same. Everything hurts a little bit more. Your timing just is not the same. I wouldn't be surprised if Tom Brady looks like Drew Brees did last week up in Green Bay. It's such a home field advantage to have cold weather, and to especially bring up a team from Florida or from the South who is not used to playing in that type of weather. I would be shocked if Tampa Bay goes up there and beats Green Bay, but you never know. It's playoff time. If Tom Brady goes up there and becomes almost like a game manager, a little bit like he did in New Orleans, they run the ball, they were much more patient, and that defense plays the way they did last week, they can beat anybody, especially with the linebackers they have in Lavonte David and Devin White.
But can they do something that I thought, and you know, Aaron Donald was nowhere near 100%, and we saw his emotions when you are as good as he is and you can't do what you normally do, and the season that everybody's gone through catches up to you at the end, and we saw his emotion. But the Rams front seven, or front four especially, they were not healthy. But they also ran into a pretty good offensive line that played without one of their best players and kept Aaron Rodgers clean. Scott, I was watching his post game. You know, it was the savage Aaron Rodgers with some comments, and we saw he had the smirk during the game, so you knew that he was having fun and he was in his element. I don't think he had a grass stain on that uniform, which is amazing considering the defense he was going up against. But As you get further into the season with the Packers, and they're 26-6 when Rodgers and LaFleur are together, and this was supposed to not happen because there was the Jordan Love controversy and Aaron Rodgers would have a chip on his shoulder, they didn't upgrade. Well, they're on the cusp of going to the Super Bowl. As you watch this offense with Rodgers operating in it with a good running back, good couple of wide receivers, what makes them so difficult on that side of the ball right now?
Their balance. And that's the one thing that LaFleur brought to that team that even I underestimated, because the more Mike McCarthy was there, the more he relied on Aaron Rodgers, and they started throwing the ball almost down after down. And I don't care who you are, it's tough to play football if you don't give the defense something to respect and keep them off balance. And for Aaron Jones and the running game for Green Bay, sets up, play action pass, and all those things that Aaron Rodgers does so well, that's a dangerous combination. So you're right. When you look at him any great quarterback who stands up after the game and has no grass stains or no marks on their jersey, it's probably 95% guaranteed that that team had just won the game. And that's what this game's going to come down to. Whatever quarterback gets hit the most, we've seen Tom Brady mm-hmm. get up and chew linemen out when he gets hit. And those guys, especially the older you get, you do not like to take those hits in the pocket. So whatever quarterback can stay clean and whatever offensive line plays the best, championships are always won in the trenches. Whatever defensive line has to play elite, offensive line has to protect, you have to be able to run the ball. And for me, I like Green Bay to do that better, especially at home. But Tampa Bay, maybe they're clicking right now, and maybe they're finding that timing at the right time of the year.
There will be a lot of discussions with Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator for the Bucs. When they blew out Green Bay earlier this year, they blitzed a lot. I mean, they heated up Rodgers with multiple fronts. They came after him. I think the blitz rate was over 40%. Now it's the second go-around. There's film. There's a feel. They sacked him 3 times. What do you do if you're Tampa Bay in terms of how much you stick to that similar game plan you had earlier in the year to defend Rodgers?
Yeah, and as we saw, you know, the Saints blew out Tampa Bay a few weeks ago and then lost to them in the playoff game. So I don't think that previous game is going to have any bearing on this game because it's so far removed. What you have now is you have a healthy Davante Adams. And I believe when they played in Tampa Bay, he was just coming off an injury. He wasn't 100%. That is going to be the ultimate X factor in how Tampa Bay plays defense. Because if Tampa Bay tries to play them the way they played before, I think Davante Adams will go off because I don't believe Tampa Bay has anybody who can cover him in their secondary. That's going to be the big-time matchup that you look for. And how much does Tampa Bay fear Davante Adams? Do they play more conservative on defense, or do they just come in the game and say, we're going to roll the dice, we're going to put pressure on, and hopefully Aaron doesn't find Davante and his separation on our DBs? But it all starts with stopping the game, stopping the run game. Mm-hmm. If Tampa Bay doesn't slow down this Green Bay running game and they're getting 3 or 4 yards a pop, this offense is almost impossible to stop.
So sticking with the blitz idea, let's look at the AFC Championship game. And we'll go with the feeling that Mahomes is going to play. Now, he still has that toe issue, which, I mean, he'll play through that. But if you go back to the previous matchup between the Bills and the Chiefs, in a game in which the Chiefs just ran it down the throats of Buffalo, and Buffalo is much improved as a whole since then. Buffalo didn't blitz at all. They kind of were smart, and they sat back, and they weren't going to let Tyreek Hill beat them over the top. So there was a lot of underneath stuff. But with that said, Andy Reid said, okay, if you're not going to blitz and you're going to give us the under stuff, we're going to continue to run the ball. If you're Buffalo this time, do you change and you go more with trying to heat up Patrick Mahomes? Because back in that game, Scott, Buffalo, for one of the rare times this year and one of the rare times of late in the NFL, 0 blitzes in that game.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can go into a game against Kansas City in this type of game, because when you play scared, it's just a matter of time. It's Greg Williams, who I played for in New Orleans, he used to call it beat me, stab me, kill me, die a slow death defense, and he absolutely hated it. I think going into this game, you look at Patrick Mahomes, he just left the game with a head injury, but more so than that, he'll be cleared for that, he'll be back, and he'll still probably have a foot or a toe injury that'll be ailing him. You have to go after him. He's not as mobile, and that's the hard part about blitzing mobile quarterbacks is, if the edge rusher misses and now he gets out of the pocket, it's a high rate of completion because you don't have enough guys in the back end to cover. So I think it's almost like a sitting duck a little bit. You blitz him and heat him up early in the game just to see how mobile he is. You have a good corner in White. He's not going to run stride for stride with Tyreek Hill, but put a safety over that way. And then you kind of say, you know, we'll die a slow death with Travis Kelce beating our nickelback or our second best cover guy. I just think it's so hard to sit back and say, we'll just play cover two and let them dink and dunk the ball all the way down the field, because they were going to score. Whether it's a field goal or a touchdown, eventually they're going to score, and you have to make sure your offense can match those points.
Okay, how do you defend Kelce in the red zone, for example?
You have to double him. You have to double guys like that in the red zone. And the easier thing to do that is once the field gets condensed, you can't necessarily double all sorts of guys out in the field because you leave one-on-one matchups, and that's where you get explosive plays down the field with one-on-ones. But as the field condenses, you have to play in-and-out coverage on guys like Travis Kelce. You have to play in-and-out coverage on guys like Tyreek Hill. And you can do it. You have enough guys in coverage to do it. But whenever you do that, whenever you focus four sets of eyeballs on one guy, that leaves other guys in one-on-one situations. That, you know, certainly Mecole Hardman, guys like that, they can win one-on-one battles. And Andy Reid does a good job of getting those other guys involved and making people pay.
What did you think of the fourth down and one play call at the end of the game?
Andy Reid, I tell you what, to have a backup quarterback in the game, I know Henny's played a lot of football, but to be standing on really your side of the field, you don't make that play, and now you give the ball to Baker Mayfield, who probably is going to go down and score. I think that was one of the gutsiest calls I've ever seen, and he knew exactly what he wanted to run. The play was high odds, high percentages, and you need the quarterback to be protected. You need the quarterback to deliver a good ball. And it was a great play call, but I give him a lot of credit for having the confidence in his team to execute it.
We'll get you out here on this, because also, as part of a busy day and people talking about the championship games, Philip Rivers, who I think has had a very unique career, very folksy charm, retires after 17 years. I know you played in a game against him in the preseason. Did you ever play against him in the regular season?
Yes. Yeah, we played over in London. We played, I don't remember what year it was, maybe 2008, but it was a really good game. And Philip Rivers, he had a really good game against us. He had some really good receivers, Darren Sproles, LaDainian Tomlinson, Gates, and they kind of went up and down the field on us a little bit, but he certainly was always a tough guy to go up against. Could make all the throws, had great command of their offense, could audible, get them in and out of plays versus whatever coverage you were giving him, and he certainly had a great career.
Now, people that have played either with him or against him talk about his unique way of trash-talking. Did you ever experience that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. He never stops talking. And I think when Phillips is not good at trash-talking. And that's what we would call him. We're like, oh, he talks all these corny jokes and all these different references he makes. And you almost sit there like, just stop. And you almost laughing to yourself under your helmet. And he never stopped. It's from the start of the game to the end of the game. But, yeah, I've heard him get into it with a lot of guys, and you're just sitting there shaking your head like this is almost comical.
Great stuff, Scott. I appreciate your time. Enjoy the football this weekend. We'll talk about the two Super Bowl teams next week.
Sounds good.
That's Scott Shanley, former Husker, former Super Bowl champion with the New Orleans Saints. We all know those people that try and trash talk, and they don't do it very well. Philip Rivers is one of those. Back to the Kansas City Buffalo game, and you know how much you're going to take from the first meeting between those two teams that Kansas City won. That was a game that was kind of rearranged because of COVID. But Buffalo zero times went after Patrick Mahomes. They seeded the box, the run box. So Kansas City took advantage of that, and Andy Reid, it wasn't just simple handoff. I mean, he dialed up some concepts in the running game, and Buffalo said, you're not going to beat us over the top. We're not going to let Tyreek Hill catch the ball 25 yards down the field. I think they'll have to change that. I think they'll come after Mahomes. Buffalo's defense is kind of built to challenge Kansas City's skill guys. They're not a huge defense, but they are fast, which will benefit Buffalo. Now, on the other side, Steve Spagnuolo, they brought it against Josh Allen. They made Josh Allen beat them. I think that's the way to do it. Now, Kansas City played great team defense, and they played great defense when it mattered. At the end of the game, there was no way you were going to be able to stop Chris Jones. And essentially in the fourth quarter on third down, Chris Jones was not being stopped. But Kansas City did a great job of playing team defense, whether funneling things back to the middle of the field or making stops when they had to. When it mattered, they played really good defense. But in that first matchup, Spagnuolo dialed it up and they said, Josh Allen beat us. Will they do that again in Kansas City? Now, rain could be a factor. What will the wind be like? But I think if you're Kansas City, you'll roll the dice and say, Josh Allen, if you are the next big star in the AFC, then beat us. I love the chess match in this game. And I especially with offensive minds going against each other, because you've got the combination of Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy going against Buffalo and Brian Daboll, who didn't get the Chargers job. He is not distracted this week. He's calling the offense for Buffalo, and they've got a great trio. When you have Allen gets a number one wide receiver in Diggs, And then you've got Brian Daboll, who has turned into a really good play caller in the NFL after he left Alabama. That's a matchup inside of the matchup. Now, the game of your interest, George, I'm going to give you two great stats.
Oh, I'm ready for it.
Green Bay, and this is important, and Scott brought it up about the 43-year-old quarterback and playing in the cold weather. Tampa Bay's got to get off to a good start. How many times have you seen with this Green Bay team, when they get off to a good start, you're not coming back? Well, there's a reason. Green Bay is the number one offense in the first half in the NFL. But here is another important thing for Tampa Bay. Aaron Rodgers, when he leads at halftime at Lambeau Field in his career, 71-1. When he leads at halftime at Lambeau Field.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. My eyes just got real old. Wow.
I'm kind of disappointed that we've made it to Wednesday and you've got the Bucks and the Packers. And remember, I told you to be strong because there's a lot of Nebraska fans that want representation in the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
And so they're all in on the Buccaneers. You got Sue, you got David, you got Jason Like, who is the general manager, Shaq Barrett, who went to Boys Town. And briefly played at UNO. So there's a lot of interest in the Bucks. So you gotta stay strong, George, in the Packers overcoming all of that.
Yeah.
And making it to the Super Bowl. Are you disappointed that we've made it to Wednesday and no one has asked Aaron Rodgers about Ndamukong Suh or vice versa?
Oh yeah, there's something there.
Uh-huh.
Oh wow. Yeah.
Has that little fracas between those two been forgotten?
I think so.
That was nasty.
Oh, yeah, very. Wow. Oh, Gary, that's good. I forgot about it, to be honest with you.
Some people might forget that Sue still plays for the Bucks.
That's hard to forget.
But what will it be like when Sue and Rodgers come together on Sunday, if they do?
Hmm.
That was not a good look for Ndamukong.
No,
but it kind of put him on the map.
In all the wrong ways.
Yes, but people were like, oh, messing with Aaron Rodgers.
Uh-huh.
All right, 71-1 when Rodgers leads at halftime at Lambeau Field. Mailbag is coming up next.